Welcome to Latte with a Lawyer, a podcast dedicated to bringing you the stories of some of America's most successful lawyers, figuring out what makes them tick, how they creatively solve problems, and how others aspiring to be them can follow in their footsteps.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Latte with a Lawyer. I'm your host, Jonathan Brickman, and this afternoon from San Francisco, we got Rachel Brockle. And she is a professor and a former litigator, and she now is with Golden Gate University. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Great to have you. It's the afternoon, but latte with a lawyer. First question, what's your morning beverage of choice to get started?
Well, I'm a little different, I think, than most people that work in law. I don't do caffeine, okay. So I'm typically drinking more of a supplement, a magnesium supplement. It's called an ionic fizz, where it's supposed to help with muscle tension release and help you balance your stress levels better. So once I started drinking that, I just kind of stuck with it, and it's really done wonders for me.
Nice. And you've never been a coffee drinker?
You know, I tried it a little bit back when I was a DA in, you know, Sacramento and Napa, but it never stuck with me. I'm already kind of a high energy person. Yeah. And the coffee tends to make me more anxious than anything else. So I just sort of said, you know what? I can live off of water and supplements, and I can do just fine.
Yeah. Good for you. Yeah, you're right. It's kind of like a vicious circle. I think coffee, you drink it, it elevates you a little bit, then you come down off it. So
yeah, the crash, right?
The crash, just like eating carbohydrates, same thing. So you're better off with probably without it, but I admit I'm hooked. 2 or 3 cups in the morning.
Most of the people I know are, but you know, everyone's got their thing. I'm more of a foodie than anything else. So like you said, the carbohydrates, that's more my thing.
Excellent. Good. All right. Well, listen, I know you tell, I want to hear your story. So I know you're a professor now, but that's not how you got started. So take us through that journey, like where you got started, why you went to law school, you know, your experience as a lawyer, and then what you're doing today.
Well, I thought I knew what my path was going to be coming out of high school. I had a horse at the time, and I loved animals. I had 2 dogs. I was working at a small animal veterinary clinic. So right away, I thought coming out of high school, I thought I'm going to be a large animal veterinarian. You know, I'm just going to continue my work with animals, and that's what I'm going to do. So I went to undergrad at San Francisco State University and majored in chemistry. And I thought I'd be on the track to transfer to UC Davis and do that. But as I took more classes, you know, calculus and physics and all these other classes that go along with that major, I realized I didn't really like science itself. I was more hands-on with animals. So I reevaluated myself and started thinking, okay, what other options are there for me? So I started taking a variety of classes. I took karate, piano, journalism, like anything you can think of. And the one course that stuck with me was taught by an ex-New York police chief. It was criminal justice. And I just fell in love with the stories. I thought they were relatable. I thought there were so many interesting issues and facts. So I just dove into that. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do something in criminal justice. Because my mentor became that professor, the ex, you know, New York police chief, you know, he said, well, why don't you, you know, do your senior thesis on police work. So I wrote my senior thesis in undergrad on the challenges of community policing. I went out and did a ton of ride-alongs all over the Bay Area. And rode around with these officers to see what they did every day.
Wow.
And I'll say, it was awesome to do, but I will say my perspective of police work definitely changed. It was a lot more, sometimes it was boring, right? They're driving around waiting for things to come in on dispatch or looking for things to see if there's any violations or crimes. Yeah. The other side of it was so high adrenaline, it just blew my mind. You know, they'd get a call where they'd have to go, you know, on a high-speed chase or deal with a domestic violence situation or wrestle with somebody, you know, who may be on drugs or something. So, you know, for me, I thought, well, you know, that's not exactly what I was wanting to do, is being super physical or high adrenaline and just running around and looking for stuff. Like, I like to be a little more organized than that. So I went back to my mentor and I said, that doesn't look like something that is long-term for me. What's another option? And he said, well, instead of enforcing the law on the streets, why don't you consider enforcing the law in the courtroom? You know, DA work, you know, you get the police reports, you get to do all that issue spotting, you're part of the drama of it, but yeah, you get to do your organization and present your case how you want. So I thought, That's a great idea. So that sort of set me on the path to law school. I had no idea that that's what I was going to do. And I thought animals was my life. And, you know, it took me down this path of applying. And then when I got to law school, that's when I started interning, working with district attorney's offices.
Interesting. Where are you from? Are you from the West Coast?
No, Yes, I'm from the West Coast. I thought you were going to say San Francisco. I'm from the Oakland area. So I'm right in the East Bay.
Okay.
But I went to school, like I said, San Francisco State. Actually, the school I'm working at, Golden Gate University School of Law, that's where I graduated from for law school. So I sort of brought it full circle back around to where I started.
Where's Golden Gate University? It's in San Francisco, I assume.
Yes, it's in San Francisco, right over the that Bay Bridge. It's right in that financial district area.
Okay. It's been a long time since I've been in San Francisco, but I used to go there quite often. In fact, I would fly into Oakland on JetBlue and take the BART into San Francisco.
Yeah, I BARTed for, I don't know, 7+ years. now I drive because I can get in there a little bit at a different time where the traffic's not so horrendous, but... Right. But yeah, so it's still, it's still a very easy, accessible area to get into. And it's right by the Salesforce Tower, if you know where that is.
Sure.
They've got like a rooftop garden up there. You can walk. It's really cool.
Terrific. Yeah, very nice. So let's talk about your experience as a trial attorney. What kind of cases did you work on?
Well, I did a little bit of everything. I was in general misdemeanors for several years. I did handle felony prelims. I worked in the juvenile unit for, I think, 1 year, in the DUI unit for 2 years as a solo lead on all those cases. So I saw a little bit of everything. You know, I would say I had DUI, I had gang cases, I had petty thefts, I had molestation cases, I had destruction of evidence, you know, all kinds of cases you can think of. You know, I saw quite a few. I never got to murder cases. You know, I didn't get that far. But yeah, I had quite the gamut.
Wait, but you were a prosecutor in the district attorney's office? Or private practice?
Yes. District attorney's office. And I worked 2 years in Sacramento and then another 4+ in Napa.
Okay. Always on the defense side?
Prosecutor. Well,
actually,
the other side. The other side. I do get a lot of people asking me, for defense attorney questions. And I say, I'm probably not the right person for you to ask.
Yeah, actually, but you're really more, I guess it's plaintiff. I'm DA. I guess you're prosecutor.
Yes. Plaintiff prosecution side. Yes.
Okay. So, so that's interesting. And so I guess you liked doing trials, right? You got to do a bunch of jury trials.
Oh yeah. I love doing trials. I actually did my first jury trial in law school as a 3L. I got certified by the bar and I was able to be supervised by an attorney, and it was a DUI case, a very fun case. And, that was kind of set me off in my career path. And when I worked in Sacramento, I think I did at least 10 trials there, and then Napa, another 20+. So I have over 30 jury trials under my belt. I know it takes some folks a long time to get to that, but I was on a mission. I was like, I'm doing as many trials as I can because I want this experience.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, no, I know this where people, I've talked to many plaintiff attorneys, and they get their teeth cut, in the DA's office, right? Because you get to try a lot of cases.
Yeah, a ton. I think any kind of county work, public defender, district attorney, you're going to get in court. That's the
true you're going to get benefit. In court. To me, yes. If you're going to be an attorney, if I were going to be an attorney, that's what I'd want to do.
Yeah. It's fun. It's so fun. Like if you could do a killer cross and you get the answers you wanted, you're like, yes, I killed that. Or if you do a closing argument, you get to kind of stick it to the other side a little bit. It's like, it's just such a fun kind of give and take, and everything, you're sort of working on your feet and creating, it's all art, right? Even talking to jurors is an art form. So, I love that part of it where you can be stylistic with it. It's not just A plus B equals C.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Your approach, now that you're a professor, your theory, how you teach it. What do you think? What are the skills you need to be successful? All the other stuff that goes into it, the nuance, the ability to read sort of the jury, et cetera. Talk about that.
Yeah. So there's quite a few things we teach our students, and I'm a stickler for a lot of them. They know this. One of them is professionalism. I think that's one of the, pivotal things to being a good attorney and keeping your reputation good with everybody is being professional. We teach them down to the little things, such as if you're going to be late to class or absent and you know it, give us a heads up. That's a courtesy thing, right? The judge is not going to let it slide if you just don't show up. Your supervisor is not going to be cool if you don't show up your job, right, or to a meeting, right, without a heads up, or as soon as they can. If it's an emergency, those things come up too, but just tell us as soon as you can. Small things like that. Professionalism too, as far as, you know, we try to have them dress for court almost every time they're going to present something. We want them feeling, looking the part, and not detracting from their message with their attire or whatever. You know, we want them to be themselves, express themselves, but we want them to also remember, you know, they are representing someone else. So, you know, keep that in mind that, you know, we're in that formal setting. So professionalism is a big one. I would also say, you know, upholding ethical values. So just because we're in a competitive type of environment where people are going head to head on trials to see who's going to quote unquote win, you know, to still keep their ethics about them, because it's easy to say, oh, I got to do everything I can to get the outcome I want in this case, but we don't want them to slip and slide into bending the rules and doing things that may not be, you know, looked upon as doing the right thing.
Mm. So I often hear from attorneys who are practicing that what they learn in law school doesn't really translate completely to the real world. What do you think about that?
Well, the beauty of what I do now, and this is why I love so much what I do, is a lot of law schools, yes, do teach, you know, a lot of curriculum out of the book, right? And you're learning things from lectures and PowerPoints. The program I'm teaching in the litigation center is all hands-on. Okay. Every class, students are presenting something. They're doing an interview. They're doing jury selection. They're doing a direct exam. They're learning how to do these practical skills. And that's one of the big things Golden Gate is known for, is we put out students from our law school. They can hit the ground running in trial. They know how to write and argue motions, get out there and do jury addresses and exams with witnesses, and they can do closing arguments down through sentencing. So, you know, that's the thing I like, is Golden Gate University gives me that benefit to get students out there and get all those litigation skills.
Okay, that's excellent. And how many other universities do you think have that kind of curriculum?
So our curriculum is, I think, a little bit more expansive than some law school. I would say probably most law schools, actually. I've heard a lot of law schools will do a week or two of like a boot camp in the summer. We do 8 weeks long, where we do a 1 week long in the very beginning, 1 week, 9 to 5 every single day, where students are learning trial skills and practicing them. And then they do a trial at the end of that week. We do an entire assessment on them to tell them, here's your strengths and weaknesses. We're going to dive into all of these trial concepts the next 7 weeks, and you'll put on another trial and see how much you've improved. So we're literally, you know, taking their entire summer and putting evidence, motions, trial advocacy, and they get a speech coach in the summer so that they are ready to go after that first summer they have.
Oh, that's great. Wait, so is this the only class that you're teaching?
No. So I help teach the trial evidence and advocacy course in the summer in that program I just mentioned. It's called the STEP program. Yes. And then this semester I'm teaching introduction to litigation. It's an elective that is a pre-STEP elective. So for that program in the summer, this course students have to take to just get the foundation and basics of trial skills down and understand how a courtroom works, you know, where to stand, how to approach a judge, things like that. So I teach other things. I've taught the motions course where the students, you know, write and argue motions. I've taught advanced trial advocacy. I help teach the mock trial and I supervise all the mock trial teams. So, you know, I got my hand in a little bit of everything.
Okay, good. And this is your full time. You're a professor full time.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Okay. I love it.
So talk about the transition from being an attorney practicing to being a professor. Why'd you make that switch?
Yeah, so it was not a very tough decision for me, because they sort of bled into each other. So initially when I was doing DA work, I was missing academia. So I went out and sought out and saw that there was opportunity to, in Napa, for example, I coached a high school mock trial team multiple times and ended up becoming the head coach by the time my last year was coaching them. I went to the Puente Mentorship Program at the Napa Valley Community College and helped mentor students from the community to help them get more into education, help them graduate, and then look towards additional degrees in education. Yeah. So I was doing all these things with mentoring and teaching already on the side. And once I hit 30 trials and I was, you know, getting all this experience I wanted, I called back to my law school and just asked them and said, hey, you know, is there any teaching opportunities that I could do. And they said, actually, a position is open where we're looking for someone to come in and teach students how to do trials. And I was like, how more perfect could this be, right? That I love trials, I love teaching and mentoring, and now I get to teach students from the law school I graduated from to do the same thing that I love and have a passion for. So it all, like I said, it all came full circle. It's great.
That was preordained. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I didn't choose this path. My path chose me.
Right. It chose you. Yeah. It sounds like it was the right fit though, right? That's amazing. Anyone else in your family, attorneys?
No, I'm first in my family for the attorneys. So I had nobody to ask questions to about, you know, how does this work? What do I do with the bar exam? I mean, it was all just a learning experience.
Okay. Interesting. Do you get involved with, I mean, there's a lot of these universities like Trial Lawyers University, Trial College, Jerry Spence, there's a lot of these around the country. Do you get involved with those at all? And what do you think about those?
Yeah, I think a lot of the trial advocacy programs that are out there are great. The one I've just been involved with the most because I'm in touch with a lot of the folks who are in that program is the National Institute of Trial Advocacy, also known as NITA. They have a really good program where, you know, attorneys can get involved in different things, whether you want to do a recorded MCLE discussion, or if you want to get something published. I've actually had a few articles published on, you know, cross-examination, tips for trial, things like that, through NITA on their webcasts. And then also, on their collaborative article pieces. And then also, you know, they also offer these free webcasts, which is what I was going to get to, where there is training you can have students or attorneys watch for free so they can brush up on trial skills. So I think NITA's great. They go all around the country teaching attorneys better advocacy skills. And they also allow us to attorneys and trial advocacy directors to get involved as well in the writing and the curriculum.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know that one. ABOTA, you know, I assume you know that group.
ABOTA. Yeah. They, the Trial Advocacy Association as well. They were involved in our TYLA national trial competition that we ran for our region back in February. And it was where we had over, I think over 15 schools coming from all over the country, law schools, to compete in this trial advocacy national competition. Yeah. And so we hosted it at our school. It went off phenomenally. And ABOTA was generous enough. They gave us a donation for that competition. Terrific. And yes, it all went wonderful. So we thank them for that as well.
Oh, good. Yeah. No, I know that's a coveted designation, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you get selected to host these regional competition. It's huge. We have over 200, you know, attorney and judge evaluators coming in over 3 days for 30 different trials. I mean, it's chaotic, but it's a beautiful organized chaos.
Yeah. Are there any like attorneys out there that you really look up to or think as like sort of icons in the as trial lawyers?
Wow, that's a tough question because there is a lot.
I figured
it'd
be a tough question, yeah. But is there anyone sort of stands out that you kind of look to?
Oh, gee. now that I'm on the spot, it's hard to think of it, right? But we might have to come back to that.
I can name a couple that people talk about, but I know there's a lot around. There's all kinds of the whole spectrum of flavors and, you know, certain people coming to mind that I've heard about that seem to have big names. I mean, California has loads of them, right? There's a lot of trial attorneys.
Yes, there's a lot. And that's why it's really hard to choose. I mean, I will say, I can give you an example of one attorney I know for sure that I look up to. John Hatami, he's a prosecutor from LA County. Okay. He was on the Netflix docuseries, The Trials of Gabriel Fernandez. If you haven't watched it, it's an amazing docuseries where this young boy was abused and tortured by his mother and his, her boyfriend. And he ended up dying. And John Hatami tried that case. And I actually had the pleasure of interviewing him for an event and talking to him about that case. And he was so selfless in that case. He just went over and above to make sure that little boy got justice. And he tried, the mom and the boyfriend. And ultimately, I think justice was done in that case. So I think he really, to me, you know, and he is a prosecutor in LA County. And I think identified with that because I thought, there's, we as prosecutors, we see such horrendous things happen to people, right? And to be able to detach yourself from it and be able to do the best you can for the case and for the victims, it's very meaningful. And he did a great job during the interview, and he's done a wonderful job giving back to the community.
Okay, terrific. Yeah. If you had to sort of, you know, narrow it down to, like, you know, again, put yourself in front of a jury, right? You're trying to convince a jury to be on your side. Like, what do you think are the things that really move the jury so you prevail as the prosecutor or any trial attorney? What are the key things, you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the things that I've seen work, because I'm one of those people, I am an overachiever in my studies, even when I'm not asked to do things. So I would always talk to my jurors. Sometimes I'd even talk to them after a win. I know a lot of people don't like to look at it, you know, look at cases again once they prevail on a case, but yeah. I would sometimes still talk to them because I want to always know how to improve, right? As a litigator. So when I would talk to them and talk to jurors about what was, you know, good and bad, a lot of it was they wanted things simplified. They want to keep things as simple as possible. So if you get into very high scientific or tech things, you know, to break it down as easy as possible for them,
yep.
They appreciate that. I also found that I would notice jurors appreciated transparency. So I would try to be as truthful with them as possible. For example, if I knew I had a video, but it wasn't great quality, I wouldn't tell them it was a slam dunk video, right? I would tell them, hey, you're going to have a video. It may be a little grainy, but you know, we'll walk through it and we'll see how that you'll be able to see it was X, Y, and Z who did this, right? So I'm very truthful with the jurors. I do not, you know, overpromise anything. I always, you know, if anything, I undersell. And I just try to make sure that I am acting as professional as possible and being aware of their time, right? So anything I can do to accommodate them knowing how important they are to me and that I'm considerate of them, I will always do my best to do that.
Got it. Yeah, and a couple of words that I hear constantly, to keep it simple, and credibility, right? You want to be a credible entity.
Yeah. Getting that connection with the jurors is huge. So, you know, if I can crack a joke during jury selection, I will. If I can just get them to talk and open up a little bit emotionally, you know, that's the way to do it. Because if you don't have a connection with somebody, you know, if you imagine being out, you know, at dinner with a friend or maybe on a date or something, and somebody's not connecting with you, right? They're reserved. They're not opening up themselves to you genuinely. You're going to feel that. You're going to either get bored or tune out or be standoffish wondering, you know, what's this person really about? So I show my true personality, like what you're getting right now. This is who I am in court. Like I'm very, you know, very conversational with them. And I try to keep it where there's sort of a mutual communication level that they know that they're getting the real me.
Yeah, no, I think that it's interesting. Connect. So, do you know who John Maxwell is? Do you know the name?
I'm not sure. Maxwell, the last name sounds familiar.
Well, he was a preacher turned like business coach. But one of the books I read of his says, because I've been a professional salesperson, connect and sell. First connect.
Connect first, yes.
Right? So
yes,
you reminded me of that when you said that. But I think it's true, right? If you don't have a connection, it's hard to really communicate.
Right. I mean, it's like the person who comes to your door trying to sell something, right? At first you're like, no, but then you hear their story and you go, okay, let me hear you out, right? Get a little bit more of that, the person to person feel.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Good stuff. So you don't miss being in the courtroom? You never think about?
Oh, I always miss it when I watch the students doing stuff and I want to just jump in there and take the reins and do it myself. But, you know, like I said, it's very rewarding to see students go from not knowing anything about courtrooms or trials and then coming out with confidence. Oh, it's amazing. But yes, I do miss it all the time, especially when I think about the cases I had and the interesting stories behind them. You know, I do end up missing it quite a bit.
Yeah. So what would be your advice? I mean, you can offer a lot of advice just about, you know, being a trial attorney, but like even like, you know, selecting your university, for example, like what would you say to people that are thinking about law school or they've gone to law school, they want to become an attorney? What would you say?
I would say try to do a lot of research before you go, not necessarily on just the school, but in the area of law you may want to get into. I went in just sort of blindly thinking, well, I'm on this journey now to be a DA. I'm just going to do it. So luckily I had the opportunity to intern at the public defender's office first to solidify that I wanted to do DA work and to see what the other side was like. And that helped me out. But I wish I had done some of that before going to law school. Like, I wish I had gone to court and just sat in a courtroom in a department. It's open to the public. I didn't really know all that, you know, before going to law school. But it's open to the public. Go into a department where they send out trials. Go watch a jury trial. Go watch folks argue motions. Go see what a DA versus a public defender does, right? I wish I had done that sooner. And then also talk to attorneys. Like, if somebody calls me and says, I'd like to do an informational interview with you just to find out what you do or find out what you did as a prosecutor, I was always open and willing to help. So I also wish I had done that, is called more attorneys in the fields I was interested in, learned about what they did every day, if it was fulfilling, if it was something I felt connected to that I could do. I, like I said, I ended up being lucky. I loved everything I did. Yeah. But if I hadn't, you know, and I was going down this path to do this, you know, it would have been better for me to have more of that information ahead of time.
And I got to ask you a question that comes out a lot. I assume your university is the same. You have 3 years of law school. Is it a 3-year program? Yes.
Yeah, 3 years.
So what did you think about, I mean, again, this has come up a bunch, but adding a year or making the third year practical, hands-on apprenticeship, internship, as opposed to another year of theory? What do you think about that?
I mean, I think some law schools that they probably need to require that. Like I said, Golden Gate is amazing. Since after I took evidence in the summer, my second year fall, all the way through it, when I finished every summer and semester, I had an internship somewhere. You know,
okay, Marine so that was DA's already part of the curriculum. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, not. I mean, I wouldn't say it's part of the curriculum, but they give you that opportunity to take evidence early on, so you can get certified in court and argue in court. So you can have an internship every semester, every summer, to be able to get in court and get those practical skills. So they're not telling you, like, requiring you to do it, but it's definitely encouraged. And I just took advantage of it, and I would at least do a few days a week every day, you know, in a courthouse to be able to get that experience.
Okay. But do you think, so other programs, again, are you a proponent of, like, adding that practical element to
yes,
the program?
Yes, 100%. You know, if they're not getting students into a courtroom setting like mock trial or like the STEP boot camp I talked about in the summer, I mean, students need that to succeed. I mean, you're going to get somebody who's by the book and they know how to maybe write a motion, but they're not going to know how to, you know, argue persuasively to a juror. It's so different than, you know, just reading something somebody wrote. It's like we talked about, getting that connection, knowing where to stand in court, how to enter exhibits and the words to use and things like that. That is so necessary for trial practice. So yes, I think if a law school does not have that as a requirement, an internship or some sort of mock trial programming would probably be a huge benefit.
And okay, good. And also, again, I hear often people go right from undergrad to law school. What do you think about taking a year off or two to get some real world experience?
Yeah, I don't think there's any issue with that. And, you know, and we're getting students right now from all different walks of life. There's folks that I'm teaching now who are working 9-to-5 day jobs. This isn't their first career going to law school. I have a ex-police chief, for example, you know, who already had his first career and now he's going back to law school.
Yeah.
So he can get his law degree. You know, so we're getting a lot of people that are, you know, have all kinds of different experience. So I think life experience can help. I do notice that some of those students who have had those careers already, or maybe they took some time off in between, are doing well because they sort of have stabilized themselves a little bit. You know, yeah. They're not worried about where the next paycheck's coming from, or, you know, how they're going to live in San Francisco because it's expensive. So yeah, I think taking time off is good. And even taking years off, you know, if you need to, and then come to us when you're ready to go.
Got it. Okay, good. Well, listen, I will, I'll let you get back to teaching. It sounds like you're doing a great job. Just sort of final words you want to leave with the audience about anything, university, or just, you know, anything in general.
I would say that for anybody out there listening that loves litigation or likes to do anything in the field with trial, I mean, do that, right? It's something that if you're passionate about, we need more good attorneys out there that are ethical and professional and will do the right thing. So that could be, you know, becoming somebody who works in the county, like a DA or a public defender, could be a judge, could be coming to law school and working with me and the litigation program. But as much as folks can out there, just do the right thing and connect with your jurors.
Okay, good. Excellent. Good. All right. Well, listen, this has been interesting. You're the first professor, so I appreciate that.
Different. Awesome. I love that. I like being the first.
You're the first. hopefully others will follow. But for everybody, again, Rachel Brockle, Golden Gate University in San Francisco. And this is sponsored by EmotionTrack, which is a legal tech platform designed to help litigators prepare for mediation trials with our Insights platform. Thank you, Rachel. I appreciate the time. It's really fun.
Thanks, Jonathan. Have a good weekend.
You bet.